Good morning, council. You may be seated. This is the case of TDP Phase One LLC versus the Club at the Yard LLC. Justice Funk and Justice Papik are recused in this matter. Four members of the court are present here today. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx.
Good morning. Thank you.
For wearing masks and otherwise abiding by our coronavirus standards. Please do wear your masks when you are not presenting. When you are arguing, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Does anyone have any questions at this point? Thank you very much. Mr. Domina, you may approach and you may proceed, and good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'll try the shield. I haven't seen watching on the web if anyone else has worn one. If it interferes with your desire to see my mouth so you can hear me better, I know it's not your face, my face you would want to see, but I'll take it off. I'm happy to do that. But if it's an experiment for you, I'll leave it on for now until you ask me to remove it.
It is a bit of an experiment for us. Is anyone having a problem?
Judge Miller Lerman here, and the audio is fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm here on behalf of the appellants, the Club at the Yard, and Eric Marsh. There is a subject matter jurisdiction issue that's been raised. I think we should start there. There's also a personal jurisdiction issue in this case that relates to the subject of notice. On the question of subject matter jurisdiction, we contend that the decision of the district court to grant summary judgment excluding the tenant from the commercial premises at issue in this case was a final order in a special proceeding. We're aware of a 2000 decision by Justice Castle when he was with the Court of Appeals that is relied upon by the appellees for the suggestion that this kind of proceeding is an action and not a special proceeding. However, we believe that what Justice Castle wrote, and I'm sure he will get a chance to affirm, clarify, or correct in this case, is that that case, the Quest case versus Headliner in 2007, presented the question of whether an entire case, including like this one does, a request for restitution of premises, should be dismissed on a Rule 12 motion and not disposed of on a summary judgment motion. In this case, at issue is the right to possession of commercial premises. The statute provides a specific procedure for how that's done. This court has consistently for decades called that kind of action a special proceeding. There's nothing in our law that prohibits joining that sort of special proceeding with an action for breach of the underlying lease, which is what was done here. There's also a claim for breach of the guarantee by the guarantor of that lease. Those issues remain to be dealt with in the trial court. This proceeding involves only the narrow question, is my client entitled to possession of those premises?
With that in mind, could you please discuss the application of Section 251315?
Yes, I can, Your Honor. Section 251315, in our view, is a statute that is designed to accommodate the movement of some questions from the trial court to this court or the Court of Appeals on an interlocutory basis. But it does not change the final order rule of Section 251902. So where there is a final order in a special proceeding, that final order is appealable, and Section 251315, in our view, has no application whatsoever.
Doesn't it require a certification by the district court judge to basically do a review and make a decision whether this should be separated to go out on appeal?
My answer to that is in the negative, Your Honor. I do not believe it does where a special proceeding is joined with other kinds of actions and the special proceeding is decided separately and distinctly. Since that separate special proceeding is entirely resolved by an order of the district court, it's not conditionally resolved subject to trying the other issues. Since it's entirely resolved, and since it is a special proceeding, we believe there is a right immediately, indeed a need immediately, to appeal that issue or lose the right to appeal it because it is a final order that would become final permanently, and 30 days to appeal would expire. Section 251315 would apply if summary judgment were granted, for example, for breach of the guarantee, but not for breach of the lease. If there were some reason why the guarantor could win summary judgment, we think that issue would not be separable from the breach of lease issue. Those are not special proceedings. Then 251315 will apply.
Thank you.
So we think that the court should affirm its long line of cases holding that forcible entry and detainer is a special proceeding, that a decision disposing a forcible entry and detainer is a final order within the provisions of 251902, and that subject should be decided on the ground that we are properly before you and that the trial court decision gave you appellate subject matter jurisdiction.
Does your argument that this is a special proceeding, is it in conflict at all with the provision of section 25-21,233 that describes it as a judgment?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. I'm aware of the distinction, of course, between judgments, orders, and decrees. I don't think there's anything in the statutes that says that the resolution of an action for possession must be by an order or a decree as separate from a judgment. I think that term simply describes the resolution, the ultimate issue of the trial court on the subject of who wins a special proceeding. And so I do not think there is a conflict created by that circumstance. Justice Castle had a question which may have been interrupted.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No, Justice Stacey asked exactly what I was going to ask.
Okay, thank you very much. I have no different or additional answer to that question for you. May I move to the question of notice briefly? Of course, a critical element of this case from our point of view is whether the statute 2521-221, which has a very specific notice procedure, was complied with or was not complied with in this case. To the extent that there are issues of fact on that subject, the trial court made findings on page 3 of its judgment, and the trial court specifically found that the notice was given by email and by personal delivery, and that personal delivery was to the lawyer, not to either the manager or the chief executive officer or LLC manager, and not by posting at the premises. The statute provides those three methods, and it uses the term serve to describe what must be done to impart that notice. That notice, a three-day notice, precedes the suit, precedes the special proceeding. Compliance with a three-day notice is a condition precedent to access to the courts on that basis. And the notice element is essential in order to get a personal jurisdiction over the party to be dispossessed from the premises.
Does that statute specify the method of how that notice must be served?
Only, Your Honor, the only section of the statute that is absolutely specific about how service is done is the portion that says that if you can't find a person to serve, you can leave it at the premises, which would be physically delivered there, or post it at the premises. There's nothing that says specifically that you have to hand it or that you can send it by certified mail to the residence or abode of the manager. But it does mention that the service has to be at that location. So we do not think that you can serve the lawyer who does not have permission to accept service. No voluntary appearance is entered. There's no evidence of any trickery or deceit or anything of that kind here. And I might add one other interesting thing. For all of the time this case was in court, in the district court, motions to continue, efforts to conduct discovery, delays, a summary judgment motion with a briefing schedule, there was never an attempt by the appellee here to reserve the notice and simply start over in a proceeding that would have produced a requirement for a trial in 7 to 14 days. Instead, it was simply the approach that's good enough to have served the lawyer. And that's after the defendants have filed an answer that said, we never gave our lawyers permission to accept service for us.
I'd like to go back to section 25-21-233 for just a moment. That section was amended in 2004, and essentially the language that appears there now stems from that date, and our decisions prior to them may be impacted by that language. And what I'm specifically asking you is whether the language that talks about where a party against whom judgment has been entered in an action of forcible entry and detention or forcible detention only of real property may appeal as provided for in a civil action. Did the legislature, by those words, intend to make forcible detention an action as opposed to a special procedure?
I'm aware of no legislative history either way on the subject, and I haven't read it, so I cannot assist you by answering from a review of the legislative history. I will say this, since 2004, this court has addressed the issue, not addressed that subject, and I think that this court's decisions continue intelligently a long line of cases which hold that special proceedings include those things that are decisional about major rights and interests of citizens affected by litigation, short of resolution of everything else in the case.
But you would agree none of our decisions post-2004 have focused on that line.
I do agree. I'm not aware of a case that focuses on that line.
Thank you.
And I urge you not to do it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Frazier, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Greg Frazier, and I represent the appellee TDP Phase 1 LLC. This appeal presents three components: jurisdictional, substantive, and procedural, each of which militate against the relief sought by the appellants. TDP Phase 1 LLC owns the real estate commonly known as the Rail Yard in Lincoln's West Haymarket. In 2013, the Club at the Yard LLC signed a lease agreement for operation of a bar known as Rule G, and it was guaranteed by the club's owner, Eric Marsh. Rule G paid rent as required under the lease agreement for 6 years until April of 2019, when Rule G unilaterally determined that it would no longer pay rent, and it withheld rent for 4 straight months. In response, TDP sent a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit, and following Rule G's failure to either pay rent or quit, initiated its forcible entry and detainer action. Rule G responded by filing an answer, counterclaim, and third-party complaint, adding WRK LLC, Robert Scott, and Will Scott as parties, and adding additional claims for relief for tortious interference, fraud, unjust enrichment. TDP sought and received partial summary judgment on its claim for restitution of the premises, but it did not only seek restitution of the premises in its FED complaint. It also, as authorized by statute, sought damages related to Rule G's failure to pay rent.
So, would you address the question that I asked Mr. Domina about the effect of Section 25-21, 233, and the statutory change in the language in 2004?
Judge, similar to Mr. Domina, I've not reviewed the legislative history, but certainly the change to the use of language of action and judgment comports with this court's prior holdings that determine, that discuss when something is a special proceeding. An action that determines the rights of the parties and ends in final judgment is not a special proceeding. A special proceeding is not encompassed within Section 25 of the Nebraska Revised Statutes, which is where FEDs live. Moreover, 25-21-227 provides that when a jury demand is made in an FED action, that the case will proceed as in all other cases. That's present in this case. But you don't have to reach whether or not an FED is a special proceeding to determine that jurisdiction is not proper here. 25 1315 specifically applies to special proceedings or non-special proceedings, and specifically requires that when there remain causes of action and parties that have not been fully adjudicated and disposed of at the trial court.
What claims or parties or issues do you assert are remaining?
Judge, at the trial court, there are claims for unjust enrichment, fraud, breach of contract with regard to the additionally added parties in the third-party complaint. There are also claims, counterclaims asserted by Rule G. And Mr. Domina makes a distinction between those claims, which he, I think, would have the court look as tacked on to this special proceeding of an FED, and the FED itself. But within the FED claim, there remains an unresolved issue of damages, which is authorized to have been brought by TDP under the FED statutes, and which has not yet been resolved. That claim, at the very least, is directly related and is part of the FED proceeding and action, and has not yet been resolved at the lower court. Because 251315 applies, this court does not need to decide today whether or not an FED is a special proceeding.
So what is your answer to the question, is the forcible detention action, is it an action? That's my question.
Judge, it is an action. It's an action because it is encompassed within Chapter 25 of the Nebraska Revised Statutes. It is an action because it ends in a judgment, because it is started with a complaint and not a special application to the court.
Thank you.
Even if this court has jurisdiction, the appellant's appeal fails on the substantive matter of the case. TDP's substantive cause of action for restitution of the premises and its right to restitution is clear. There was a lease agreement that was executed. The tenant failed to pay rent after paying rent for 6 years, and the FED was properly pursued in order to obtain restitution. Rule G, in its appeal and at the trial court, attempts to claim that it is exercising a set-off, or now newly on appeal, that it is simply seeking to apply credits for prepayment during April, May, June, and July of 2019 that excuse it from its obligation to pay rent under the lease.
Is the restitution of premises relief on summary decision enforceable while the action?
Judge, it is, especially when there has been a jury demand, because the FED statutes 25, 21, 221 make clear that when there has been 25, 21, 227 make clear that when there's been a jury demand, that the procedure of the case will proceed as in all other civil cases. And so it is proper for the court to consider a motion for summary judgment on the issue of restitution of the premises when, as here, it is uncontroverted that there was non-payment of rent. The fact there are no material facts in dispute, and the law is clear that we're entitled to restitution.
So does a plaintiff in such a position who obtains a partial summary judgment on the restitution of premises issue, are they entitled to a writ of restitution by the sheriff to be issued immediately?
Judge, the answer is yes, absent some action by the defendant to stay the issuance of that writ. In this case, no writ was issued. The defendant vacated the premises after the order of restitution of the premises was entered.
Thank you.
How does the appellee respond to the appellant's notice argument?
Judge, 25, 21, 221 does not require that notice be served in the same manner as a complaint. It certainly sets out methods in which a plaintiff can affect notice of the 3-day notice to quit. But those are not exhaustive. It doesn't say these are the only ways to do it. In fact, what is important in 25, 21, 221 is that it requires notification by leaving written notice with the adverse party. TDP accomplished that in three ways in this case. First, it mailed notice to Mr. Marsh, owner of Rule G, at the leased premises. Second, it hand-delivered a copy of the 3-day notice to Mr. Marsh's attorney, and Rule G's attorney. And finally, it emailed a copy of the notice to Mr. Marsh and Rule G's attorney. And after that, it didn't stop there. That wasn't the end of the inquiry for TDP. TDP wanted to ensure that notice had actually been received as required by statute by leaving written notice with the adverse party. And it confirmed telephonically and in writing, both of these are contained in the record, that not only did Mr. Marsh receive the notice, but that he discussed it with his attorney. It would be, when the legislature has seen fit to require some additional steps for notice or some additional service as with a summons and complaint, it has explicitly stated so. There are a myriad of examples in the briefing we've provided to the court in which the legislature has determined that that was appropriate and has explicitly stated in the statute. Here, it's not stated that notice has to be required as in a summons and complaint. All that's required is that notice be provided, and clearly actual notice was provided in this case. The trial court also denied at hearing the appellant's motion to continue, and the appellant requests that this court determine that that denial was an abuse of discretion. Not only was the denial of the motion to continue not an abuse of discretion, it was the right answer in this case. The appellants asked the court to give them additional time to conduct discovery related to the square footage of the leased premises. First, there is no evidence in the record why the appellant could not have conducted that discovery over the 6+ years it was in sole possession of the leased premises prior to the hearing. Second, the appellant actually presented evidence of the square footage at the hearing on motion for summary judgment. Finally, it didn't matter.
The square would there have been after a notice to quit, so to speak, would there have been an opportunity to conduct the measuring?
Yes, Judge. The notice to quit was affected service in June of 2019, and the hearing did not occur until September. And throughout the entire, I see that my time is up, if I may finish the judge's question. The hearing was not until September, and the defendant was in sole possession of the real estate for those months.
Thank you.
Seeing my time is up, and assuming that there are no further questions, we would ask that a decision of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
There is 9 seconds.
Now. 9 seconds, Mr. Domina.
I have nothing to say in 9 seconds, except best wishes with your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for being here today and complying with our coronavirus attempts at providing safety to everybody. Please leave by the side door. Thank you. The court is adjourned for this morning, and you are excused.